Let's play some cards.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
From Harrah's Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and professional broadcaster Paul Harris.
You're good, kid, but as long as I'm around, you're second best. You might as well learn to live with it.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up.
Now, from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, will the thrill Fiella, who you may have seen the last couple of weekends on Fox Sports Net, with the WPT returning to TV with its Legends of Poker coverage, an event that took place a few months ago. Will was undoubtedly the star of some of those broadcasts, and you'll hear him today talking about that experience, plus playing in the main event of the LA Poker Classic this weekend, where he had a deep run. He also last week made a final table at the main event of the Venetian Deep Stack Series. He's been a very, very busy man and an outspoken player at the tables, and he will join us a little bit later on. Also coming up, a lot of details about a lot of things happening here at Harrah's St. Louis in the month of March, including sit-and-go tournaments and player appreciation days and a chance to win some cash just by flopping quads. That's all you got to do, flop quads and actually get paid. We'll tell you about that a little bit later on. Hello, I am Paul Harris, sitting in the Harrah's St. Louis World Series of Poker Room. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is at home in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing well. Will the thrill, that quiet little mouse at a table you're talking about?
Now, you know him pretty well, right? you played in a bunch of tournaments with Will?
I have. I met Will a few years back, and we instantly became friends. He's a great guy. And I guarantee if you go and you sit down at a table with Will there at your table, you're going to have some fun.
Yep.
Will doesn't know the meaning of the word quiet at a table. He's a good guy. I'm looking forward to this talk.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having him on as well, and glad to see him getting some TV time. I think the WPT is his first TV final table. So, he's made millions on the tournament circuit, but that's his first real TV exposure. And today will be his first real radio and podcast exposure. So we're looking forward to that. Okay, so in the news this week, you and I don't really have any personal poker stories to tell. At least I know I don't. And you've been playing around a little bit, but no real big stories, right?
Correct.
All right, so where do you want to start? We can start with Poker on TV. We can talk about minor developments and rumors when it comes to Full Tilt Poker, or we could talk about an odd thing with the all-in button at the LA Poker Classic this weekend. Those are three things that I know I want to get to today. You pick the one you want to start with.
Well, I definitely want to get to the odd thing that happened at the LAPC, because I'm not familiar with it. I want to hear that one. But let's just kind of wrap up what's happened in the last week, progression, what's going on. Maybe give some of our listeners a little heads up on our political campaign and what's going on with those four candidates for the Republican Party nomination. Maybe.
Oh, that's right.
Things like that.
Yep. As we're doing the show today, they have their primary in Michigan and Arizona. And, you know, we don't talk politics on this show, but politics does have a bearing on the possibilities of online poker returning in a legal, regulated form in the United States. So you take it, Dennis. You know more about this than I do.
Well, there's really down to four candidates for the Republican nomination right now, and all four of them were interviewed out in Nevada, and all four of them were asked what their thoughts were for the online gaming and the future of it and gaming in general. And so they had to specifically answer the questions. Putting them in order, Rick Santorum was out and out against it. He is not an advocate of gaming of any kind, and thinks anything that spreads it out there more and makes it more easily accessible is probably not a good thing. So if you are wanting to play online poker, this gentleman is sitting in the White House would not be an advocate.
Mm-hmm.
That's the politest way I guess I can say that.
Okay.
Now then, Mitt Romney was asked this several months ago. He said he would come to a decision. He hadn't reached one yet. He wanted to do more research. When he was pinned down a couple of weeks ago in this interview, true to his word, I have to admit, he did come up with a firm statement on it. And he said at this present time, he cannot back the online gaming and passing that bill and changing it. He said there's just too many question marks, too much potential problems, that he is definitely not going to back it at the present time. Mitt Gingrich was also asked about it. His opinion, he was kind of wishy-washy back and forth and did not make a clear statement of it. I wonder in the back is that perhaps he personally is not opposed to it, but with some gentleman throwing millions and millions of dollars at him by the name of Sheldon Adelson, who is against it, he's got to be very, very careful in picking his words.
That's a good point. So, Sheldon Adelson, the owner of the Venetian and the Palazzo and the biggest casinos in Macau as well, has come out publicly and said that he is not in favor of online poker. And considering he's the guy who's writing multiple $10 million checks to Newt Gingrich, you got to think that that turns that into Gingrich's opinion, too.
Now, why would that influence him? I don't understand.
Nah, money and politics don't mix.
No, not at all. But and again, we're wondering if there's going to be another shoe fall concerning the gentleman that owns the Sands, that maybe he just doesn't have all his ducks in a row yet. Maybe he wants to do a little more research. Maybe he thinks a little more of the social conscious amendments need to be incorporated in there to make it a little safer. I'm not for sure.
Yep.
At some time, I guarantee that his stance will change and he will be on board with this. I just don't know whether it's going to be sooner or later.
Well, I'll tell you exactly when it'll happen. When he figures out how to make money from it. And when he can figure... No, seriously. I mean, I really think that that's it. I mean, it's entirely possible that it's a moral conviction of his that would prevent him from ever supporting it. But he's already in the gambling business. So it can't be that he's against gambling. That's how he became a billionaire. So as soon as he figures out a way to make money out of it and maybe be a leader in the market, I think that that's when his opinion ends up changing. That's what happened with some of the other brick-and-mortar owners who were originally opposed to the idea of online poker because PokerStars and Full Tilt were dominating that field and they didn't see a way to get in there. But post-Black Friday, as the paradigm has shifted in the United States, now you got Caesars Entertainment, which owns this casino, and WSOP and WSOP.com, and you've got all the others who are lining up with either their current free brands of online poker, just waiting to flick the switch to a real money version, or others who are already in the process of developing those kind of sites. Sheldon Adelson and the Sands Corporation and the Venetian subsidiary obviously have not figured out how do we become market leaders in that and make tons of money off of that. The second they figure that out, Sheldon Adelson is pro online poker, in my estimation.
Well, I can't argue with that, and I do think at some stage they will be active in the market and will have their own site or team up with somebody else. There's no doubt about that.
And
the
by
only
the
gentleman
way,
running...
I was just going to say, and by the way, at that point, Newt Gingrich is pro online poker.
Good point. All right. But the bottom thing is Ron Paul is the only one that really is an advocate of it, and he supports the freedom to make your own choices and what you do within the confines of your own house as long as you're not hurting anybody else, you know,
yep.
It's your own decision. So he has the by far the slimmest chance of getting the nomination, but he's the one that's the strongest advocate for it.
Right.
So I'm not for sure that if we end up with a Republican in the at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue that we're going to be able to get anything done. So the lame duck session, again, is looking like a very good possibility, or if President Obama is reelected.
Although we should point out that the president also has not come out and said that he's in favor of this because it hasn't gotten to his desk yet, or maybe it hasn't gotten to the point where it's a possibility of getting to his desk. I haven't heard the White House come out and affirmatively say, send me a bill and I'll sign it.
No, he has not said that at all, but he's also not come out and said that he would veto one or anything.
Correct.
They're working out, now, again, this is not exactly a major secret. There is work going on in Washington right now. There is meetings. They are trying to compromise. Kyle and Reid, if they can put something on paper that perhaps would be stronger against other items, but would allow poker to go online, perhaps some sort of compromise can be reached there. Perhaps something that's going to put money in the coffers of the, both the federal and the state level. Perhaps something that will have those social conscious amendments in it to guarantee to the best of their ability that no one under 18 is going to be playing and no one's going to be playing reckless on it and all this other stuff. You know, if they can get that in there, John Kyle feels safe on it. I do think he would sign off on it, but there's a lot of work to be done there. I hope they're progressing with it.
I stick to my prediction that nothing happens this year, even in the lame duck session, and 2014 at the earliest. But
well, the CEO of MGM has come out and has flat out said that it will be done before the end of the year.
I think it'll be happening at the local level, meaning at the state level. We now have more and more states that are moving in that direction. There's a new bill in Iowa that has moved forward, and there was a bill filed in Mississippi this week. Now, somebody filing a bill doesn't mean that it's anywhere close to actually becoming legislation, but it's the state level where I think we're likely to see things break, and that will put pressure on the federal government to try to go in there and say, wait, there's a pot of money here, and we don't have our fingers in it.
You're absolutely right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and that's when we'll see action at the federal level.
Well, yeah, there's a very good chance of that. It may take the prodding from the states to do it. But I'm telling you, if you throw enough bricks at a wall, it starts to make dents in it. And while a bill doesn't necessarily mean it's ever going to become law or anything, you keep introducing bill after bill and state after state, it gets noticed and it starts, it will gain momentum.
All right.
So we'll see what happens, but I absolutely think that at a state level, for sure, something's going to happen before the end of the year, and I've still got my fingers crossed on the federal level.
While we're talking about online poker here, there are some new developments that, frankly, I don't really consider these developments. I think the chances of this happening for Full Tilt Poker and the Bernard Tappy Group aren't quite as long as the odds for federal legislation of online poker, but I agree with Matt Glantz, who recently wrote a blog about it, that the chances of it fit into the category of little hope. He wrote, without the Tappy Group buying Full Tilt, there's little hope of U.S. players ever getting their money back. There aren't any other buyers on the horizon. And unfortunately, he says, I don't expect any deal with Tappy to happen based on their recent actions. They've had several months to perform due diligence. The DOJ cleared the way for them over 3 months ago. After their latest leaks and public embarrassment campaigns of poker players involved, it just seems implausible for them to move forward. He says, you know, if you have money there, you might eventually get some of it back from the U.S. government, maybe 20, 30, 40% of your money. But it's entirely possible that the government will continue to claim this was a Ponzi scheme, in which case you'd only get your deposits back, not any money you made from that. So Matt wrote that blog a few days ago, and just yesterday, Benham Dayanam, who's the lawyer for the Bernard Tappy Group, came out with a statement for a website, PokerStrategy.com. He says the deal is now, quote, very close, unquote, to being executed. He says progress has been made towards completing the deal. They've chosen to extend the deadline past the end of February to continue the negotiation. He says, and I'm quoting him now, positive progress has been made in recent talks, and each of the parties feels reasonably confident that we'll be able to reach a successful conclusion. As such, everyone has agreed to let the process continue for a bit longer. As for those outstanding player debts, remember we talked about the loans to Barry Greenstein and others, which is something like $16 million. He says they've had talks with players. They're continuing to talk with the players. Some have been working with them for a solution. Others remain, in his words, recalcitrant, which means they're not going to give you back the money if it's not guaranteed to go to the players. So, first of all, I'm shocked to hear a lawyer talking so much publicly about what is supposed to be confidential stuff. I mean, my lawyer is not allowed to go to the press and tell people what's going on behind the scenes. I'm surprised Bernard Tappy lets his lawyer do that. Nonetheless, he has come forward and said these things, and I'm still on the Matt Glantz side of this, which is very, very pessimistic about a deal going through with Tappy to buy Full Tilt and get players back their money. What's your read on first Matt's blog and then the Tappy Group lawyer's response?
Well, I wish I could argue more with Matt, but usually he puts his ducks in a row before he starts talking. And he himself, he admitted in there, he's talked with a number of people, and that's his opinion from what he's gathered from all the different information. I hope he's wrong. Unfortunately, he's probably right. We'll see what happens with the Tappy Group. As far as an attorney speaking, I guarantee he didn't come out there and speak without the blessing of the Tappy Group. PR is so vital in today's world that perhaps they felt they needed to get in front of the bus a little bit and do some talking and get some positive feedback so that people won't perceive them as being the ones that are, you know, kiboshing the whole deal. But all he's really saying in there is they're continuing to talk.
And they push back the deadline.
Hope, but he's just saying they're continuing to talk.
Remember, they told us in September and October, oh, we'll have the new Full Tilt Poker up by March 1st. That's 2 days from now, and that's obviously not going to happen, and they're pushing the deadline back. I would predict that they're going to have to keep pushing the deadline back because a lot of these pros who have loans outstanding are not going to pay it back to these guys because they are not going to give it back to anybody who's not going to assure that the money goes to the players. Barry Greenstein probably spoke for a lot of them when he said that a couple of weeks ago, don't you think?
Well, I think there's several different groups within those pros. There are some of them that the moment they feel comfortable, we'll honor it, we'll take care of it, and we'll pay it back, like Barry. And he just wants to ensure it goes to the right people and doesn't just line somebody else's pockets or disappear. So I can agree with that. Unfortunately, there's probably some of them within there that don't have the capability of paying it back right now. Those are going to be the question marks. I'm not for sure what's going to happen with them. And then there's probably, although I haven't heard anybody come out and publicly say it, there's probably some of them that don't think they owe it. For some reason, some way, some twist in their mind, they don't think they have to pay it back. Mm. Now, I hope that's not the case, but I'll bet you within that group there's somebody that thinks that.
I think you're probably right. Speaking of Full Tilt Poker, their pros, Phil Ivey and Eric Lindgren and Jennifer Harmon, all showed up this weekend to play the main event of the L.A. Poker Classic. Do we have any problem with these pros showing up and using money that they probably made during their years associated with Full Tilt Poker to buy into a 10K event? We said no when Ivy showed up in Macau. I assume that would be your same response for the LAPC.
It is. Again, I know all three of these personally. Just like Doyle said, I consider all three of them friends. These are people that I have trusted before, and I see no reason not to. I don't think they had any of the decision-making. I don't think that they were involved in any kind of a thing. My God, to use the word Ponzi, I still just curls in my stomach. But
yep.
They're back active. I think you're going to see more of them become more active and starting getting back involved. I still think there's some fallout. I still think that there could be some ramifications back to the shareholders. But somebody like a Eric Lindgren or somebody like a Jennifer Harmon or a Phil Ivey, I'm telling you, if it's a fair and just settlement of some sort and it involves them having to repay some of it, I think they'll do the right thing. So we'll see what happens on all this.
But, now, we didn't hear about any repercussions about players confronting them at the Commerce this weekend.
But
you know what? I think that might be a little bit different among the thousands of players who show up at the Rio this summer. We already saw one incident last summer with John Juanda, who was a Full Tilt pro, getting verbally accosted, that's to put it mildly, by at least one player there. I wouldn't be surprised to hear about an incident like that this summer. We certainly don't want it to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised. I hope it doesn't, because I think that the people who do that are wrong, but I'm not going to be surprised when it does happen.
Well, as I've said before, when you talk about poker players, you're talking about all aspects of life and all types of people. The majority of people that I meet at a poker table are great people. You have fun with them. Everything is good. But just like any time you put a group of a few people together, there's going to be some of them that do actions that you don't agree with. And if you put 10 or 20,000 poker players down at the Rio, yeah, there's probably likely to be a couple of them that do things that you don't agree with.
All right, now, speaking of the L.A. Poker Classic, here's the all-in button story, as reported by the World Poker Tour live update staff on their website. It apparently involved a pro named John Fan, whose nickname is Razor, John Razor Fan, who apparently, according to this report, has tried to pull off this angle shoot before. So here's what happens. They're in a hand, and Fan... the action's on him, and he tells the dealer, I'm not going all in, but I'm wondering, can I borrow the all-in button? Now, if you don't know what the all-in button is, in many places, in a lot of tournaments, and I know they do this at the Commerce, even in cash games, the dealer in their tray has a button that says all in, which they put in front of a player when they say all in or move all their chips forward. They put it in front of them so it's absolutely clear to everybody that that person has moved all in. And then if somebody else calls, they have another button that says call. This makes it clear to not only all the players at the table and any supervisor who may be nearby, but also the surveillance cameras in case there's an argument about the hand and they have to settle a dispute later on. So, that said, fan says, can I borrow the button for a minute? Here's what it says on the WPT website. The dealer...
Well, just a second, Paul.
Okay, yeah.
He asked for the button?
He said, could I borrow the button? I'm not moving all in, but can I borrow the button for a second? So the dealer warily hands it to them. This is what it says on the WPT site. And fan begins to use it as a coin. He gives it a small toss in the air, and it lands face down right in front of him. He tries to give it another small toss, and it nearly gets away from him. On the third toss, fan hefts it a little higher, and it lands face down on the other side of the betting line. There's a beat before fan reaches in and pulls the button back. The other player says, that's a call. Fan doesn't seem to agree. A floor man is paged to the table to hear the situation. Fan pleads his case that he told the dealer he was just borrowing the button, not using it to move all in. The table seems to agree with the other player that this should be ruled a call. Now Matt Savage, who's the tournament director at Commerce, he's paged to come to the table, and as soon as he hears that John Fan asked for the button, before he even hears the rest of the story, he says, you're all in.
That's it. That's what I say. As soon as he asks for the button, I don't care what else it says. You ask for the button, you're all in.
Savage even added at that point, asking for the button is called the John Fan rule. And then he walked away and said, you're all in. So
okay.
the result of the hand is that Fan had top pair. Carson, the other player, had middle set. Fan loses. He goes home. Angle shot unsuccessful. But but here's what I want to know, Dennis. What is Fan what is Fan trying to accomplish there? Is he he's obviously angle shooting. Was he trying to get a read off of Carson at that point by playing with the button, like tempting him, like, I might go all in here?
Yeah, I'm quite sure that's part of what he's trying to do. He's trying to get the other player upset. He's trying to get the other player to do something that's going to reveal or tip his hand one way or another. I don't agree with it. No, I don't agree with two things. Number one, the dealer should have never given him the button.
Right.
Number two, once he took possession of the button, he's all in. It's a done discussion. It ends. You don't have to explain anything more. John, you want the button? If you take the button, you're all in.
Yep. That button
end of it, it makes it simple.
there is nothing ambiguous about the all-in button. In fact, it was created to avoid ambiguous situations.
There you go.
If it's in the dealer's tray, it means nothing. If it's in front of any player, that player is all in. A or B, those are your choices, not choice C, I'm just playing with it.
Unbelievable.
You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of that situation at the, was it at a WPT event in Europe where the guy tried to angle shoot and Thomas Kramer, the Florida tournament director, was called over to make a decision, and he knew that this guy had pulled this a couple of times before and went above and beyond and made a ruling. I'm not going to rehash the whole thing, but it's obvious that tournament directors see this sort of thing all the time, and when you see it multiple times from one player, you just say, I'm not putting up with this anymore.
Yeah. The tournament directors want everything to run smoothly and fairly and all players to be equal and just, you know, play cards. And anytime somebody gets a reputation or tries to do something like this, they're going to try and shut it down.
Yep.
And Matt doesn't put up with any crap. I'll tell you that right now.
No, he doesn't. And also, I would say I want a tournament director to act this way towards pros who are trying to pull crap like this against an amateur or a guy who's less experienced in any way, because that hurts the image of our game. We want people to have fun at this game and think that they're on a player playing field. It should be. They shouldn't think it when it's not true. But it is a fair playing field, and so it's up to the people, the referees of the game, the tournament directors, and frankly the dealers too, to make sure that that playing field is level for everybody. No special treatment for you. And if you're a pro pulling this sort of stuff, we have even less tolerance for you.
Well, I'm not going to argue with any of that at all, but I will say there were two things done wrong there. And John knows better than this. Once he took the button, he was all in, period.
Yeah.
That's it. But the dealer should never have given him the button.
Correct.
You know, the dealer can pick it up and say, if you want the button, you're all in. Do you want the button?
Yep.
There you go.
I agree.
No, nice, simple, you know, no ifs, ands, or buts. We shouldn't be put back to the other player to have to make a statement or say he's now all in or he's not all in or call the floor or whatever. If the dealer just very simply takes control of there and says, here's the button. If you want it, you're all in. If you don't want it, that's fine. Tell me what you want me to do.
Yep.
Now,
here's something interesting. This was the LAPC main event, which is a WPT event. I hope that the cameras caught this, and I hope that when it airs, they show this as an example of what not to do when you're playing tournament poker. It'll be nice if that's the case. The WPT, by the way, I think has added something very good for this season. They just started airing it a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to talk to Will Fiella in a few minutes because he's been featured on the first two broadcasts. But now instead, remember they used to just do 1 2-hour show, and for the most part, that show was all in and call. Okay, he's got ace-king, he's got queens, it's a showdown. Oh, there's a king on the flop. Oh, there's a queen on the river. That's what it used to be on the WPT. Last year, they went to two distinct one-hour shows, and they added more context. Well, this year, they're taking each event and turning it into 3 one-hour shows that air over 3 weeks. What that means is we're now getting to see more real tournament play. In fact, there were a couple of hands that Will was involved in, we can talk to him about, and others at the Legends of Poker where nobody was all in, where somebody made a 3-bet and somebody else had to make a decision, and post-flop play is shown, and I think that's a really good thing. You know, they've kept Tony Dunst with his raw deal segment. They've got Kimberly and Vince and Mike doing their stuff and Matt Savage doing tableside interviews as well. But I really like the fact that we're now getting to see more of that because we're getting used to that in the WSOP coverage on ESPN and with all the streaming coverage. Poker players want to see more poker being played, not just coin flips.
I totally agree with you, which brings us to one other quick thing you need to bring up. We need to mention Maury and what's happening with Poker After Dark and that.
Oh, that's right. Poker After Dark is coming back, not as new shows, but it is coming back on the NBC Sports Network. This is the channel that used to be called Versus, which used to carry the NHL games. NBC Sports Network is going to air the Poker After Dark starting next Monday. It'll be on at 11 o'clock Central Time. 5 nights a week, plus the director's cut on Saturdays. Maury says that they are going to be airing a lot of reruns, but there are also 5 weeks of shows that never aired because they pulled this show off of NBC's regular network in September. There are 5 weeks of shows that never aired, including 4 weeks of cash games with people like Antonius and Ivy and Durr and Ellie Lesra and David Oppenheim and Phil Hellmuth and Andy Block and even Annette Oberstad, who'd never been on TV in a cash game. You'll get to see those eventually. I don't know the dates of when those unaired shows are eventually going to show up on NBC Sportsnet, but we'll show you that. And Maury was interviewed just this morning by our friend Chad Holloway from Poker News, and he said that we're hoping to be able to do new episodes of this and maybe next year new episodes of the NBC Heads Up Championship, which did not take place this year but had gone on for several years before that. And in fact, NBC Sportsnet is now airing reruns of that. I turned it on last night, Dennis. I saw the 2010 Heads Up Championship, which is the one where you finished third. So there's a little bit more TV exposure for that as well. Maury, of course, and his crew have taken on the ESPN broadcast of the World Series of Poker, and I thought did a great job with them last year. But it'll also be great to get more of this After Dark stuff back on the air, don't you think?
I absolutely agree. There's kind of a void right now. Everybody was used to watching the poker, and now it's gone. Everybody is anxious to get some more of it there. The NBC Heads Up, I thought, was awesome. I loved playing in that thing. Maury said it's 90% chance it's going to be back next year. I am biting at the bit. So I would love to have that thing back next year. I think it can make some great TV and some great interviews, and you have a heck of a lot of fun sitting down with those guys.
Now, what's going to be interesting is to watch these things when they air next week on NBC Sports Net. I'm guessing that Maury and his crew had to go in there and scrub out every Full Tilt Poker logo.
I don't know. I really don't know about that because the players are playing with their own money. The players are sitting down there and all. If they're wearing those, I could care less whether they were wearing a Full Tilt thing or not. They may blank them out. They may not. To me, that's not part of the game. That's not part of it. It's history. Let's just watch some good poker.
No, but I'm not saying they should blot it out because we're mad at Full Tilt Poker. I'm saying they're blotting it out because NBC doesn't want to have any connection to Full Tilt Poker anymore. That's why they took the show off the air in September, because they didn't want to have that connection anymore. So Maury and his crew probably had to digitally either remove or blur out the Full Tilt Poker logo on the felt and maybe on the players' hats and shirts and all that. Anyway, we'll watch it next week, and we'll see. We've got our guest standing by, and we'll get to Will in just a moment. First, let me tell you about some exciting stuff coming up here at Harrah's St. Louis in its World Series of Poker Room. Tomorrow is Leap Day, and they've for $2.29, they've got a $2.29 food special going on. $2.29 buffets. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, $2.29. Grill 21, which is the restaurant inside the casino here. All food on that menu, $2.29. Burgers, sandwiches, soups, omelets, all that sort of stuff. Anything but a whole pizza. Sammy Hagar's place, Sammy's Beach Bar and Grill, $2.29 appetizers. All of that going on tomorrow, plus they're going to do $40,000 in cash drawings, including somebody getting a $10,000 grand prize winner. All of that for tomorrow. Then for March, in the World Series of Poker Room, they're going to start doing specials for the month of March, including player appreciation days this Friday and Saturday, where they'll be giving away food, you know, pizza and Chinese food and subs and that sort of stuff from noon until 1 a.m., both Friday and Saturday. And then starting on Monday, they're going to start doing $60 sit-and-goes from noon until 9 p.m. As soon as 10 people are ready to go, you cough up $60 apiece, boom, you start a table, and everybody plays for the chance to win a seat into the $350 tournament they've got going on here on March 18th. Also in the month of March, you come into the poker room, you swipe your total rewards card at the kiosk here, and you're in the running for one of eight free seats into that March 18th $350 tournament. And the other thing they'll have going on, starting on Friday, is the flop and win promotion. Each day, they'll have a prize for anybody who flops quads. Starts with quad deuces for $200, then quad threes for $300. Different cards each day until March 14th, when the winner will get $2,000 just for flopping quad aces. It's pretty hard to make $2,000 in a cash game when you flop quad aces because nobody else has anything, and you're essentially going to take down whatever happened pre-flop. But you do that, and you'll get $2,000 on March 14th. So they're calling it March Mania, the Poker Player Promotions. You can find out about them by going to the Harrah's St. Louis website at harrahsstlewis.com. And we'll be back with more of the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harrah's at Harrah's St. Louis. Will Faiella joins us next on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from Las Vegas and the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis. I am Paul Harrah's, along with Dennis Phillips. Welcome to show number 160. You can get all of our shows downloaded directly to your smartphone via Stitcher Radio, also available on the iPad, or you can subscribe via iTunes or find all of our shows and all of our previous guests on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Speaking of guests, let's introduce today's, Dennis.
Well, our guest today is Will Faiella. This is nice because Will is a personal friend of mine, and you now may have seen him on the World Poker Tour broadcast the last couple of Sundays. He was on his way to winning the Legends of Poker event last fall at the Bike. He's done well since then, because since then he's won the event at the Borgata Winter Open. He made the final table here at the Venetian Deep Stack main event, And he had a deep run out at the LAPC before he finally got knocked out. Will, welcome to the final table.
Thank you for having me, Dennis.
Oh, not a problem. It's great to have you here. I got so many questions for you. First of all, how are things in California? And what, you came back from nowhere on day three. How did you get some chips? And then what happened at the end there at the LAPC?
I grinded my way. I waited till I got a position where I could get my stack in. I was really, really patient. I got no hands day three. And I thought it was a great spot to get my chips in because I had the sickest, tightest image at the table. And I got a guy to call me, I thought, pretty light for my hand. And he raised to 4,000. I had 55,000 left. I had a caller in between. And I looked down at 2/8. And, usually with the right player in my image, no one's calling me with ace-jack. And he happened to make the call after I shifted all in with pocket eights and jack in the window. So that was the end of my LAPC main event. But, I got it in as good as I could do it, So I was happy with the my situation there.
Will, do you usually have a tight image at the table?
I have a tighter image. It's opened up in the last year, I would say. So, I do have definitely a tighter image, and people, the best players in the world are a little more insecure to play hands with me because they know I usually have it. So, they don't want to fool around with the weird hands,
But now, one thing I know about Will here, whenever he sits down at a table, he gets very gregarious. He's very vocal. Do you use that to your advantage? Do you try to get tells from other players? Do you try to get them? Can you talk a person into calling you or folding, depending on which way you want it?
My mouth has been a huge attribute to me my whole life because I definitely nobody wants to talk to me in a hand. Nobody on this planet. I mean, the best in the world just look down and shut up. The guys that think they can out-talk me, they're wasting their breath and time. If I want you to call, I'll talk you into a call. If I want you to fold, I'll talk you into a fold. That's why when we every time I'm on an interview, they always ask me, how do I feel about the rules about talking in a hand? I says, it's crushed me. It really is. It has made me change my game because, once I'm in a hand and I want to talk to someone, when everybody's like statuesque and they don't want to move and they don't want to say a word, I'm like, really? You got it? Do you really got it? I don't think you got it. I think I got the best hand here. Are you sure you got the best hand? I don't know. I feel like I got the best hand. And, I just look at their reactions when I say things like that. And, I had a very similar situation with this kid Ryan from Connecticut. And I seen the whole scenario melt down. And he just lost a huge pot. And he's very, very, very tilty. So I was in the big blind. And in the next hand, he raises big. He raises like 3.5 when everybody was raising like 2.5. And I called the raise with 6-3 out of the big blind. And only because I know his scenario, and I know he's going to bluff bomb it. So the flop came jack, 3-8, jack, 3-8, rainbow. And there's another guy in the hand, and I check, and he 3/4 pots it. And this other guy in the hand, he's tanking, and he calls. I said, all right, now I'm just going to call because I had chips here and just to see if I can bink, a miracle when no one will see it coming like a 3. The turn is a 10. I check. Ryan bets 3/4 of the pot again. This kid's like tanking and tanking. I said, this kid definitely has the best hand. So if he calls, I'm now folding. But he folds and now like the sun just lit up. Like I just knew right now I have the best hand. And also, the 10 was the 10 of hearts, so it drew a flush draw to the board, too. So I said, all right, so I still think I got the best hand with 6-3 here, which is bottom pair. So I'm just going to call, and I'll make it look real stealth, like I called statuesque-like, and like I made it look like I'm trapping him. And the river was a 7. So it was a jack 10-8-3-7 board, and I check, and I have like 70,000 left, and and he looks at me, this kid Ryan, and he's real statuesque, and he looks at me, and he's staring at me, and he's like, how much do you have? And he takes out a stack of $5,000 chips that equals like $100,000, and he's slowly calculating, just moves it all in. I go, wow, I did not expect this on the river. I really thought I had the best hand. And I'm talking to him, and I'm talking to him, and I'm looking at him, and I'm just getting reads that this kid's face is red, and he don't want to call her. I feel he doesn't want to call her. Now I'm 2 or 3 minutes in the tank, and we go on a break. Now everybody in Atlantic City, the Bogart, is standing around this table because it's a huge pot at this time. And we're thinking, and I'm thinking, I'm thinking, I'm talking to him, and he's not moving an inch. I swear, if you touched him, it looked like he would crack in half. I says, you know what? I made my mind up in the beginning of 2011 that if I think I got the best hand, it was for my whole tournament, by the way, if I think I got the best hand, I have to make the call. And this is 5 minutes into the break, 3 minutes before the break, so we're 8 minutes on his hand already. And I go, I call. He takes his two cards. He threw them in the muck about 600 miles an hour. He said, nice. And he said, nice call, and ran out of the building. I turned over 6-3 as soon as I knew his cards were in the muck, because you never know if he has, like, ace-3 here.
Yeah.
And the crowd went crazy. The crowd went crazy. I just knew it was a whole scenario, and it was a whole meltdown scenario, and I just knew that, you know, he would do this. And that's just one of the things that's been helping my game a lot, you know, my mouth and my reads.
But what a great lesson, Dennis, in knowing your opponent and knowing what happened before and understanding the psychology of that and how that applies to the next hand that person plays.
Right.
Oh,
right.
It's really awesome. Helped me. I mean, it took a lot of chutzpah.
I would be saying something different if I could, you know, if it wasn't on radio right now, but it took a lot of chutzpah to make that call, but I just felt I was good. I really did, knowing the player.
I love it. I'm telling you, that is an aspect of the game that is so critical to it. Because if you get into a tournament, if you look back at almost any tournament you've been in, there's one, two, maybe three hands that were critical hands through it. And, right. You know, to be able to make that call and double up, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It was one of those good feeling calls. You know, there's always that little guy on your shoulder saying, are you sure? Are you sure? If you mess up now, it's over, boy. You know, so
one quick question, Will. Had he turned over a jack or something and paired the board there, would you have shown your hand?
No. Well, my tournament was over, you know what I mean? But you know, like, I just felt that was good. Listen, I tell you, I've only been wrong, I think, two times in these situational calls. I think it was two times, and the one was I had ace-nine of hearts. I raised pre-flop. A guy called me from the button, and I know he's going to try to outplay me. And the flop was 7-8-10 with two hearts. So I have an open-end straight draw and the nut flush draw. So I pound it. Comes to me, I bet like three-quarters of pot. He calls. And the turn was a brick, and I pound it again, and he calls. And the river was a brick, and I check. And I think he's going to try to take it away from me here. And I says, I'm just going to give up on a hand. And he bets like three-quarters of the pot. And I'm saying, wow, why would he bet so much here? This is definitely a bluff. And this is too much of a drawing board for him to just check cool the whole way. Something's up here. I think my ace-five might be the best hand. And I'm thinking, I'm looking at him. He don't want to call either. I said, holy shit. He had air, but his hand was better than my hair. He had ace jack for a gut shot, and his miss was better than my hand.
That's always frustrating when you call the guy's bluff and it turns out he had the better hand than you anyway. Now, speaking of all of this and reading players and talking to players, I've been watching you the last couple of Sundays on the Legends of Poker coverage on the WPT, and, you know, we gave away the fact that you're going to win it when this Sunday's thing airs. And congratulations on that victory. But I was watching it, and in particular, one of the amateurs who you were playing against, the guy named Jeff Verde, he's a Canadian guy who owns a McDonald's up there, as Mike Sexton keeps reminding us. You got involved in a lot of hands against this guy. And this guy, well, I don't know if you've been watching it, Dennis, but I haven't seen a televised guy who gave off more tells than this guy, Jeff. Which I know, Will, you were picking up on everything this guy was doing, pretending to be weak, when he was really strong, acting one way and then doing another thing. All of the things that are consistent with anybody who's been watching other players through the years and can see what they're doing. This guy was giving off every single one that there was. And both he and the other guy who you ended up playing against when the final three were there, it was you and two amateurs, those two guys would show you their cards or tell you what they had, something you don't see pros doing ever. And I'm wondering if you get to see that a lot with amateurs, and if somehow, Will, your personality, by being so gregarious at the table, gets them to share information with you.
It's amazing. They give me, they spell it out for me in a book because, you know, I'm a likable guy. I'm friendly. I make everybody laugh. And they kind of, like, befriend me. So they don't want to insult me. So by them showing me, they're showing me the respect, and I gain a lot of respect at the table. But you know, Jeff Beardes wasn't giving off tells. He had freaking Tourette's in every hand. I thought he was actually going to go into like spasms. It wasn't even like, I mean, I'm staring at him and I'm saying, holy Christ! I mean, I heard it tells, but this is like retarded. It wasn't even close to a tell. The guy was basically convulsing every freaking hand.
Now I know Dennis has another question for you, but I actually there was one hand that you played against Jeff, and you actually tweeted about this hand and asked people how would you have played it. So I don't know if Dennis actually saw it, but why don't you tell Dennis about the King Queen versus Ace Queen hand and see what he says about how you played it and what he would have done. Do you remember the hand I'm talking about?
Yeah, I remember that. How can I not remember that hand? That's like the hand of my life on national TV. I stand up, I get bleeped for about 5.5 minutes. Do you think I remember the hand? I remember the hand.
All right, so tell Dennis what it was, and then Dennis, you talk about how he played it and what you might have done differently or the same.
Well, to be honest, I don't take much advice from Dennis Phillips when it comes to playing poker. Let's get that straight, number one.
When Will sits at my table, I ask for a table change.
The guy claims to be my friend. He don't have a friend in poker, number two. All right? I kind of like take him under my wing, and I walk him around a little and show him to some of the big shots and stuff. But, he's a nice guy. No, Dennis is a very endearing, very good friend of mine. No, I'm just joking. But back to the hand, Jeff Beardes raises with ace, queen of spades. I'm on the button. He makes it $325,000. I got $3.5 million. I don't know the exact chip count, but I have about $3.5 to $4 million at the time. I make the call from the button with king, queen. The flop comes ace, queen, queen. Hello? I like my flop right now, but, it's a little scary. Here's where the Tourette starts by Beardes. Okay? In the big blind, I forgot to say, though, in the big blind, Teach, Ken Aldrich, made a call with pocket deuces, so he's in the big blind, too. So Teach checks. Jeff Beardes flops a full house, so obviously he checks. And I'm standing here like a deer in the headlights. And so I bet $300,000 just to see where I'm at. I'm actually less than what he raised it to preflop. So Teach folds, Ken Aldrich folds, and it comes to Jeff, and now he starts to something's wrong here, and he's back and forth, he's back and I call. I'm like, holy Christ, this guy's got a monster, and I am immediately, shutting everything down. Houston, we have a problem. All my whistles are going off. The freaking neck hairs on my back are standing up. Everything that you think just went wrong in the hand, it just was turned face up to me. So the turn is a deuce of whatever. It's a dud. No draws out there. He checks. And, the way I tell it to my friends, F you. I check right behind.
Uh-huh.
Now, I know Dennis Phillips. And if Dennis Phillips checks behind here,
I'll eat a poker table. I'll eat the whole poker table if Dennis Phillips checks behind here. But anyway, back to my hand. So the river is a three of diamond, doesn't pair the board, doesn't do anything. And Vitis leads out for like $500,000 to me. And if you see it on TV, I stand up and I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you really kidding me? Like, this is like the fourth hand. I already got cooled already, by the way, at the final table. So I was like already like miserable. And I'm like, oh, I know this ain't good. And I say out loud, I said, I've seen Hollywood before. My friends are watching me. I'm saying, this don't feel good. This don't feel good. And this is on national TV. And you see it. And I want to fold my hand. I was ready to fold here. And I just know that Beardies could have Queen Jack here. I know he could have Ace King here, and I think he's trapping me the same way. But, you know, I really thought I was beat. I really thought I was beat. It was just a really, really hard fold, and I was so close to folding, and I just said I had enough chips to withstand the call just in case, you know, my read was off. But my read wasn't off, and I made the call, and Beardies won the pot.
You're absolutely right about one thing. I would not have checked the turn. I would have found out for sure what the heck was going on. I'd have bet another $300,000. He smooth calls me again. I run to the bathroom.
At least you're honest about it, Dennis. At least you're honest about it. No, but
oh, I guarantee I would have made the second bet out there. And as soon as he called mid-raise, whatever he thought he could do, I was history.
Yeah, the problem is that I don't think anybody could really fold that river. So the reason why I checked the turn is I wanted to keep the pot as small as I could, because if I bet the turn like $500,000 or $600,000, you know, like I sit there and I say to myself, you know, like, what do I do on a river if he really has it? You know what I mean? Am I just going to fold?
Yep.
So I figured, you know, by keeping it small, maybe he bet small and I could see his hand. So basically that is what happened. And I paid him a minimal bet, and, you know, obviously it worked because I came back to win the tournament anyway, which I was blessed and lucky to do. But it was just a tough, tough, tough hand.
You know what? It was a tough hand, but considering the circumstances, I think that you lost, if not the minimum, as close to the minimum as you possibly could. I mean, I think everybody has to cry call that river. But watching it on TV, of course, they have the close-ups of Jeff, and you're across the table from him. So we're actually maybe seeing even more than you were seeing. But I tried to put myself in your place, and looking across the table at this guy, the way he was acting, like you said, it was as if he had turned his cards face up.
Yeah, it wasn't too hard. I mean, Tourette's was everywhere.
Yeah.
And he was just... He was breathing heavy, and when he shook his head to make the call, he shook his head like, no, don't do it. And just folded the river for TV. That's the thing that bothers me on any. If I would have folded that river, the poker world would have blew up.
Yes.
They would have thought I was the devil in the hand, because, you know, it's not an easy fold.
Dennis, do you run into situations against rank amateurs? Well, maybe the word rank shouldn't be in there, but do you see this situation? I mean, after all, the guy did make the final table, so he has some play in him. But do you see this situation when you're against real amateurs who are like that, who are just giving off so much information, it's as if their cards were face up?
Oh, absolutely. I'm telling you, I have sat down at tables where it was showdown. There's no doubt about it. And there's nothing better than to tell a person what his hand is before he shows it and look at the reaction on their face.
Yeah.
I love doing something like that. They just look at you like, oh, my gosh, and, you know, it's awesome.
Well,
Dennis, we all know you can't read the side of a cereal box. So who are you kidding? Who are you kidding? You couldn't read somebody in the hand. If you don't get smashed by the deck, you couldn't win. You couldn't win a lollipop in a poker tournament.
Wow.
The secret is out. What can I say? Oh, and by the way, Will, you'll be here next week for the Wynn Classic, right?
Absolutely. Let me tell you something. I tell everybody, you know, for an amateur at the main event, after I abuse Dennis Phillips, I always tell it like it is, because he knows I'm just being funny like I always am. not because he's my friend. I really felt at his final table, the main event, I think he played one of the best amateur poker final tables I could ever see an amateur play. I thought he was, in my eyes, ranked number one at that final table playing because he played unbelievable. And I was actually stunned. You know, I actually expected him to play, you know, I didn't know him then, but I actually expected him to play a lot more amateur than he did, and he played as good as any top pro could play that final table, and I was very, very impressed.
Well, thank you, and the check is in the mail.
Well, we appreciate having you on. We're all going to be out at the Rio at some point this summer, and I hope we can sit you down and talk more at length about lots of other things that are going on in your life. And by the way, as a guy who spent a couple of years in Stony Brook, I know you're originally from Smithtown, just a little neighborly high from me.
Oh, great, great. You went to school there or you lived there or what?
I spent a couple of years there not going to the classes at the school.
Oh, great school, too. That's a great school there.
Yeah, it is. So we appreciate you being on the show today, and good luck with whatever you're up to next. Are you going to Bay 101 next? Are you going to the Wynn Classic? What are you doing here in the next couple of weeks?
I'm going to Bay 101. I happen to be a shooting star this year. That was like one of my biggest my biggest accomplishments in the poker world, and it really felt good to be nominated for a shooting star. And it's the first time I've been, so you know I want to. Take advantage of that, and Bay 101 is just a great tournament with all the $5,000 bounties everywhere, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait.
Well, congratulations on that, and have fun there, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it, guys.
Will the Thrill Fiella joining us here on the final table. I always like a quiet, shy guest, don't you, Dennis?
I have 8 questions. You know how many of them I asked him? 0. I didn't get to any of them. We got to have him back on.
Absolutely. That's all the time we have for today. Come down here to Harrah's St. Louis in the World Series of Poker Room for the big March promotions, including the Flop and Win and the, tomorrow, 229 Leap Day specials, 229 food and $40,000 in giveaways. For details, go to harrahsstlewis.com. You'll find it all on their website, including the schedule for the World Series of Poker circuit event in April. Until next Tuesday at 3, I'm Paul Harrah's for Dennis Phillips on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.